Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, proudly brought to you in collaboration with GorillaMedia.co.nz. Joining us for our Kiwi Collaborator section this time, where we try and give Kiwi activists the coverage that they frickin' deserve that mainstream media will not ever give them because it threatens the very establishment that they support. His name is Steve Green. Now, some of you may have remembered Maria Bradshaw coming on to talk about how her son committed suicide after a very short period of time after being on pharmaceutical drugs, and along those same lines criticizing the psychiatric institutions for being one of the most tyrannical forces, covertly, of course, in this country. Steve, welcome to the program.
Thanks very much, Vinny. It's a pleasure to be here.
Pleasure to have you, mate. Now, I would love it if you would just give us a bit of a backgrounder on yourself, your qualifications, if any, and how you kind of got into activism.
Yeah, sure thing. So, I've been with the Citizens Commission on Human Rights for the last 20 years now. I didn't set out to get into it for that long, but just as time's gone by, you've learnt more about what's going on, and you really get the idea that, man, nobody's doing anything about this, and we need to do something about it. So I've stuck with it and met a lot of people. I've learnt a lot of information that probably is very not it's information that everyone should know. And it's just not, it's been blocked by the media, it's been blocked by the government, and, you know, we're, it's not me, by the way. And, people need to get that happening, need to get it out there. People need to stand up and actually, take the control back of their families, their schools, their just all aspects of life. It seems to be eroded, and we can see a clear erosion, and the source of that erosion coming from people like psychiatrists and psychologists telling us what we should think, the thought police, and we want to turn that around, and that's why I'm doing it.
And what's the name of your organization again?
Citizens Commission on Human Rights.
Oh, right.
It's been going for 42 years internationally and a little over 30 in New Zealand.
And how long have you personally been involved?
20 years. Quite a while.
Long, long pedigree.
Yeah.
Have you actually seen any? In such a long span of experience, I'd wager you must have received at least some mainstream media coverage of the issue.
Oh, for sure. One of the first things that the group uncovered were the abuses of children at Lake Alice Hospital, which is sort of partway down the North Island of New Zealand, probably near halfway near Whanganui and Palmerston North, between the two, in a little place called Martin. And they were putting naughty kids in welfare and that sort of thing. They were throwing them in there under the care of this guy called Dr. Selwyn Leakes. That's his real name. And he was using the electric shock machine as a form of punishment. And they had painful drugs like pyraldehyde. And they were shocking kids, as young as six and as old as 16. And actually, we heard a report from Queen's Council, who did some investigation into this, that the youngest there was actually 4 years old, which is very appalling.
And whoa. They were electroshocking a four-year-old child.
Well, we don't know whether they actually did it to the four-year-old child that was there, but we do know that they were using it pretty much indiscriminately to the majority of the boys that were at the child and adolescent unit.
Well, I don't understand electroshock therapy. I mean, it's like, I don't know, if somebody has a bad back or something, you put them on a torture rack. That's kind of like the sanity to me as it stands, you know. If somebody has a problem with their mind, shoot copious amounts of electricity through it. Doesn't that seem like slightly insane And if so, why aren't the psychologists the ones getting the electroshock therapy for being so frickin' nuts?
Well, it's a very good question. And I think it's one you should put to them. Probably get someone on the show one day and you know, it'll be quite a hoot. Their thinking is very, very crazy. I mean, it's, you can't sort of seem to use logic with the way they think. It just doesn't fit into their frame of reference.
Now, are we talking I keep getting confused. Is it psychiatry or psychology that we're dealing with here? I thought it was psychiatry, right?
It is. It's a bit of both. They both come from similar roots.
Let's talk about the roots then. What's their roots?
Yep. Well, you're looking at originally you had these people who had these, you know, the bedlam days and that sort of thing, and you had people that looked after these sorts of institutions where they would throw people for pretty much, you know, who didn't have much control of their body or their minds or anything for whatever reason. And they were the caretakers. And, you know, they decided to, well, maybe we could do something. And of course, you know, from the bedlam days, that was the time when some bright chap decided that he would charge admission to for the, you know, aristocracy and that sort of thing to come in and look at these crazy mad people.
Like and a freak show.
Yeah, exactly. And he made a lot of money over it. So it became a bit of an industry as such. And from there, they've gone into, you know, putting some sort of framework around that. And in 1879, somewhere around there, there was a experimental psychologist by the name of Wilhelm Wundt in Germany who decided to test to see if he could see if man had a soul. And his experiments were a complete failure on that front, and he decided that no, man does not have a soul. They're just an animal. And, so therefore we must treat them as such. And pretty much that was a defining point in like a fork in the road, if you like, of where the treatments became very much of physical nature in their means.
If man was an animal, then why didn't they round up the aristocracy and put them through the meat grinders then and have some burgers?
Yes, well, you want to say.
That's how it works, isn't it, Stephen? I mean, the definitions that psychiatry and psychology are always put on other people, but they're never applied to the psychiatrists and the psychologists themselves. Like a psychiatrist can't be insane because he's the one that diagnoses what insanity is. It's like the America's Cup, for example, you know. As soon as somebody beats the Americans, oh, the Americans just changed the rules, so the Americans are still the winner.
Yes. Yep. But they went into all sorts of things like, you know, extracting teeth and I can't remember, like the different parts of your organs, you know, the bloodletting, the everything from that to the rotating chairs to, you know, putting in coffins and dunking them in water and ice baths. And, you know, there's just been quite a series of torture methods that have been actually, you know, inverted commas, psychiatric treatments. And this is their history. This is the profession's history. And
I would venture to guess that the industry hasn't changed much.
No. Well, it's made to look a bit nicer. For example, take electric shock, and in the early days, it was just pretty much hook them up to the mains and give them a good zap. And you'd imagine, you know, with your nerves and everything, that it would arch the back up pretty badly and in some cases break the spine and break other bones in the body and cause some pretty severe events, you know, crippling events that would happen to their patients. And so, you know, nowadays they use muscle relaxants and they use anesthetics. So they knock someone out, and they make it so they can't move a muscle at all. And then they give them a good blast of electricity. And the reasoning behind this is that back in the day, they couldn't find any epileptics who had schizophrenia. That's bizarre, isn't it? An epileptic apparently didn't have schizophrenia. So what they did was they tried to produce an epileptic fit on a normal person, so-called, you know, schizophrenic at that stage, in a means to way of curing them of this so-called disease that they saw the person had. And it's carried on right through today. That's been debunked.
Just like today.
Donks ago.
Yeah, yeah. Well, just like today, I mean, they talk about trying to cure, but they in fact, haven't they abandoned the whole rationale of curing things and now they're just into treatment? Because
exactly.
They realize that they've never been able to cure anything, so if they kept claiming that they were trying to cure stuff and never did, people would think, oh, hey, something's up.
you're exactly right. They call it management now.
It's kind of like going from global cooling to global warming to climate change. You know, as soon as something discredits your argument, then you just change what your argument is and say that it's still valid.
Exactly. Yep. That's the way it works. Pretty brilliant on the public relations, though, to manage to get government funding for this length of time and keep it going. For this long, because, you know, really, if you were to take a business look at what they are doing and what they're producing, it's pretty much, you know, death and mayhem. There's no real results, you know, of their treatments, of, you know, getting a productive member of society again. You know, that's pretty much why you go into the hospital system. You know, you break something or you get ill and you can't work or do anything, so they fix you up so you can get back and be a member of society again. Well, it's pretty much.
But, you know, isn't that like kind of the direct opposite? Because in my experience, a lot of people that I know who have gone into psychiatric institutions have gone in for very little reason at all and come out much worse than before.
That's right. That's what I'm saying. It's like a complete flip side of what health should be. It's like how to create illness, how to create, deformities and death. I mean, it's got a. The amount of death that's occurred of people in these institutions is incredible. Like more than the amount of people that have died in the wars around the world.
Yeah, well, wasn't it like the number one killer in the 20th century was the people's own governments, you know, general extermination campaigns like the Khmer Rouge and Chairman Mao and Russian exterminations and things of that nature was number one, and number two was psychiatry, you know, and it was a close second.
That's good. Yes, well, control of people has been, getting into politics and has been quite a part of their legacy. You might not know, but there's a guy called a British psychiatrist by the name of John Rowling Rees, or J.R. Rees, and he was the co-founder of the World Federation of Mental Health. And this is in 1940. He told a meeting of the National Council of Mental Hygiene in the UK. He goes, "Public life, politics, and industry should all of them be within psychiatry's sphere of influence. We have made a useful attack upon a number of professions. The two easiest of them, naturally, are the teaching profession and the church. The two most difficult are law and medicine." And 5 years later, the co-founder of the World Federation of Mental Health, he's a Canadian psychiatrist called G. Brock Chisholm, he says, "To achieve world government, it is necessary to remove from the minds of men their individualism, loyalty to family traditions, national patriotism, and religious dogma." So that's almost the backdrop of this social control of the populations, and you can see that pretty clearly now.
Well, yeah, it is. It is kind of getting consistently worse, in my opinion. You know, it's almost like psychiatry still has legitimacy. It didn't have it in the first place, but conveniently, it's really good at lying because it knows what people how people think. So it's managed to convince everybody that it does have legitimacy. You know,
they say they've got that legitimacy. That's right, but when it comes down to it, do they actually? And we beg to differ. We say they haven't. They don't have, you know, right to control a person's mind. They're not. They just don't have it, and they shouldn't have it. No one should actually have it. No one should actually be above the law. But they effectively are. You know, you tell me, could you take someone against their will, lock them up for an indefinite period of time, you know, drug them, shock them, you know, do all sorts of various things, restrict their communication so they can't talk to people, like they can't talk to their family and that sort of thing. I mean, all these things are actual criminal.
I was going to say, it sounds like the modus operandi of Charles Manson. I mean, what are they going to do? What do they have to do before people wake up to the tyranny of psychiatry? I mean, do they have to start carving things into their foreheads with scalpels or something? I mean, come on.
Are you putting swastikas in there or something like that? Getting back to their Nazi roots, you know?
Yeah. Well, in fact, that was a big part of Nazi campaigns and propaganda and all that was psychiatry. And indeed, many experiments were carried out on the victims who were kidnapped and taken to concentration camps so they could study their subjects and figure out a whole bunch of naughty little things about them. And of course, it's not entirely different today. I mean, you go down to the local psychiatrist's office and it's basically like a pseudo Auschwitz. I mean, everything but the ovens.
Pretty much. You know, just when Hitler was a boy, they were coming up with those racial hygiene plans. And, you know, people like Ernst Rudin and that. And you know, it's not as familiarly known, and it should be, that it was the Germans that were killed first in those concentration camps. They were the trialed, and it was the mentally ill, around 30-odd thousand of them. And she got put through as a test to that whole program before they got into the Jews. I mean, everyone knows that, you know, 6 million Jews went through and that sort of thing. But it was the mentally inferior or the and that sort of thing. And then, of course, the dissidents and the people that didn't agree with the government. And
yep, those people are very, very dangerous. You know, they're very, very bad people who don't agree with genocide and murder and kidnapping and drugging people against their will. They're just nuts. and they should be locked up because they're dangerous. Ladies and gentlemen, our very special guest live from New Zealand for our Kiwi Collaborator section is Steve Green, and we'll be right back after the break.
Come gather around, people, wherever you roam. And admit that the waters around you have grown, and accept it that soon you'll be drenched to the bone.
I'm sure Australia feels like that, drenched to the bone.
Yeah,
oh, yeah. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Proudly brought to you in partnership with GorillaMedia.co.nz. Our very special Kiwi collaborator for today is Steve Green from the Human Rights Council of New Zealand, is it?
Citizens Commission on Human Rights, yeah.
Citizens Commission on Human Rights. Sorry.
No worries. Yeah.
My bad. Now, one thing I wanted to really get into here with psychiatry itself, I mean, what kind of resistance movements are there available to this? Because I've never seen a protest outside a psychiatric institution. I've never seen any psychiatrists be pulled out of their cars and tarred and feathered, you know, and all these things I'd really love to see. But in terms of actually going toe-to-toe with these scum, what kind of actions are being taken here?
Well, there's a variety of different things that we do. On a basic organisational level, what work we do is people come to us with complaints of what has occurred, whether it's from a psychiatrist or an actual treatment that they've received. It could be a child who's been labelled with some sort of thing like ADHD or conduct disorder or, you know, mathematics disorder or whatever they've decided to throw at the child. And would help the family or the individual to document what happened to them. Would if they want to file complaints, if they want to do some media, if they want to actually really get some change happening, we would go through channels to make that happen. We've done protests and up and down the streets, and sometimes we do it in public venues and that sort of stuff. So a variety of things. Yeah, I mean, overseas, it's a bit more, maybe there's a lot more people in, say, like Los Angeles or Washington, and they'd march on the street and do that sort of thing.
Well, they have all the psychiatric medications being advertised on television.
Mm. Actually,
we don't have that in that country, and that's what I thought was the two differences,
They do? Actually, we do. Actually, we do. You know, there's only two countries in the world that has direct-to-consumer drug advertising, and that's America and New Zealand, the only two in the world. Now, in New Zealand, we have things like, we don't have the psychiatric drugs yet, but we have the other drugs. Like they can do, you know, things like Panadol and how to get an erection and whatnot, various drugs like that, the Vioxx and things. But they haven't stooped to the other pharmaceutical, the psychotropics in New Zealand. But it's interesting. Yeah,
I suppose they leave the psychotropics to the gang problem. You know.
Well, it's interesting because they have a very similar profile, these drugs, to street drugs. And most of them have actually started. Most of the street drugs have actually started out in psychiatry as a legitimised prescription drug. I mean, I don't know whether you know, but heroin, for example, used to be a prescription drug as late as the 1950s in New Zealand. It's unreal.
Whoa. Well, hey, they're now giving the kids cocaine for their attention deficit problem. So that, it's my favorite quote, and I told this to you yesterday, Steve. Always shocked, never surprised.
The amount of stuff that's happening is just abysmal, and it's got to change. I mean, putting kids on these powerful stimulants and drugs and even antidepressants, antipsychotics, It was working with TV3 just in the last month, and they've just done a couple of good news items exposing the amount of antipsychotics and antidepressants being used in New Zealand. And, over 1 million prescriptions for antidepressants, and antipsychotics has got the biggest pharmaceutical budget of all those drugs. And, that's from ages of as young as 2 and as old as 100 are on those drugs. And for what reason?
It's a one-size-fit-all, in other words.
Oh, pretty much. I mean, it's not like medical drugs where, say, you've got a, you can show an imbalance, or you can show like something wrong, say with insulin in your body. You can actually have a look at that in a microscope, or you can see through an X-ray or a CAT scan or something that there's actually issues wrong, a pathology to it. But and then you can see that, okay, with that pathology, you can have this drug or that. This drug to help with those sorts of pathological illnesses, actual disease. But within psychiatry, you don't have any of that. All you have is someone subjectively looking at you and going, well, yes, I think this person's got this and that going on, or this kid's got this going on and that going on. There's no blood tests. Sometimes they'll tell the parent, oh, he's got a chemical imbalance in his brain. He needs Ritalin to balance that.
And that's actually a complete lie. It's a whole fabrication, and it actually just comes down to a marketing campaign.
Well, that's because it's not science, I'll add. I'll add that's because it's actually not science at all. If you go to any major university around the world and you look at the demographics in engineering, in true science subjects, engineering or doing BScs, apart from biology perhaps, and this isn't being sexist here, this is just a fact, you'll find that engineering is 80 to 90+% male. Mm-hmm. You'll find that physics and calculus are 80 to 90% plus male. You'll find that biology has maybe the highest female component, but it's still maybe mainly male. Then you look into psychology, and you'll find 70 to 80% female attendance, and a bunch of feminized men. And
yeah, well, this is the difference, isn't it, Will? I mean, you're supposed to have some kind of scientific pathology, but instead you've got psychopathic pseudoscientists.
Well,
exactly.
Everyone knows at school, guys normally excel in math science subjects relative to females. You know, and so you know, when it's reversed, when we see 80% of psych grads are females, then we know that, okay, perhaps it's not leaning towards science. Perhaps it's leaning to more of an emotional analysis of people. And then, like you say, they call insane people sane all the time. Like, oh, I won't get into some social examples. It might be too controversial, but...
mm-hmm. Yeah, we try and shy away from controversy on this show.
Occasionally. Occasionally.
Now and then, depending on who it is, of course. You're absolutely right, and you know the aspects of getting someone subjectively and shoving them in front of you and going, well, you know, they've got this and that wrong with them. You know, it's you would think that that's something that might have happened a very, very long time ago, and you know, we've learnt from these things. And in today's day in society, you know, today's day with technological advances and the likes, you would change from that. But those of you who would remember the interview with Maria, that she talked about the before school checks. This is the mass screening of 4-year-olds in the country. Do you remember that? This is
I vaguely remember that.
Okay, well, the government's basically decided that through their advisors, and this is where. You know, the bureaucrats come into it and the psychiatric advisors or the psychological advisors of the country make their mark, and they're advising, you know, the politicians and government that, you know, there needs to be changes made and to the behaviour of these kids, and they have the solutions and this is what they do. They've created this test. Actually, they haven't created it at all. What they've done is they've grabbed it from overseas. And it's called a strengths and difficulties questionnaire. And it's designed for a lot older kids, but they're using it on 4-year-olds in New Zealand. Now, I've got an official information act request that came back and it said that there was around almost 60,000 kids that they've put through. And actually, I've seen a news item that says that it's actually 70,000 since 2008. That's from the health minister. That's an awful huge percentage of our 4-year-olds. And these are health checks, so they're looking at their eyes and their ears and, you know, normal sort of health-related things. And we've got no problems with those and actually think that those should be definitely done. But this is supposed to be like a pre-entrant to school test to make sure they're going to be doing well. And a huge component of this is the behavioural checks. And these are done by checklists. Very much the same way they check for ADHD or conduct disorder. That's actually what they're looking for. And they get the parents to fill out this checklist. You know, does the child fidget? Do they answer back to you? You know, how long do they, you know, take to look at a task? That sort of, those sorts of questions. And they get the parents to fill it out and they get the teachers to fill it out. And they come up with a score and whether the child's abnormal or on a borderline or normal. And these are absolutely psychiatric diagnostic tools to find out about a psychiatric so-called disease. And it's got no place in our educational system, no place whatsoever. It's actually got no place even in the health system. And, you know, we want to get the people up in arms over this. This is a screening, like a mass screening of our children. It's going to go on their file and they can't take it off their file. You know, they'll grow up and say, oh, you've got this, you know, mental disorder that's from you from a four-year-old. It'll restrict them from different jobs, from obtaining different, you know.
That's the reason why I walked away from a psychiatrist a while back. I was supposed to pay like $140, right, to get interviewed and do these tests and whatever, because my mum thought that I had ADHD because she got a brochure with all these symptoms that are, you know, typical of any kid, of course. So I went into the psychiatrist and, you know, did all these tests. And like one of them was like just sitting at a keyboard, you know, just testing your reaction times. And and the other stuff was like, saying, oh, have you had a father missing for most or part of your life or whatever? And I say, well, yes, I have. And he goes, okay, well, that's usually one of the causes of ADHD. And I was like, hold on a second. This seems like a whole lot of BS to me. Would I really want to be labeled like this ever again? And I left his office that day. I think I was 14, went in there by myself. You know, and so I left his office that day, never went back. Never paid the bill, and I've never felt better.
A very good decision. Now, there are some timely and good decisions you can look back on your life, and you can go, yeah, that was one of them. Well done.
Out of the mouths of babes, eh? Well, I think this is the interesting thing, you know. Even kids that have slight amounts of mistrust of authority figures can really figure these people out, because they're quite thinly veiled in their propaganda and their, well, basically, they're kind of like social terrorists, in my opinion. They cause an inordinate amount of stress and, well, danger to the general public, who are totally unaware of them on a social level. And this is the reason why I think, you know, we shouldn't have a war on terrorism. We should have a war on psychiatry.
Well, I'll be in for that.
But, you know, the pretty difficulty is it'd be difficult to see a country that we can invade, you know. This is
Well, you don't have to invade a country to have a war on it, but maybe you just don't call it a war, you know. It's like, well, it's a war in our minds, isn't it? You know, it's a war on the families and the education system and, you know.
But
I think that's worth fighting for.
But it ties into so many other different things. I mean, you know, you and I are both aware of the New World Order, Steve, and how all these bankers and all these psychiatrists and basically the food industry, and it's a multifaceted agenda that's being put on us. So basically we're being attacked from all directions at all times. And that's the real difficulty here, is that when you're trying to correct either one of these particular phenomena that are causing damage to our society and to our people, it seems as though the other aspects that you're not focusing on at the time so that you can effectively fight one particular enemy, basically they grow out of control in your absence of attention. So it is the entire system itself that needs to be reworked, not just psychiatry. Our very special guest, ladies and gentlemen, is Steve Green, coming at us live from New Zealand. And we'll be right back after the break on the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, brought to you in proud partnership with GorillaMedia.co.nz on the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Our very special guest joining us live from New Zealand as part of our Kiwi Collaborator section today is Steve Green. Steve, welcome back.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
And we're just discussing over the break, my consideration, I mean, I worked in the industry for a short period of time, looking after autistic boys, and the one thing that I noticed was just how little oversight there was of me, and more to the point, how little training I received in order to take care of somebody with serious conditions. Now, does that translate by chance to the psychiatric industry? Because my consideration was that there would be a heck of a lot of untrained, unmonitored people out there, and the potential for abuse would be enormous. Recently, an article here from GorillaMedia.co.nz, Swiss therapist abused 114 patients. A social worker in Switzerland has confessed to sexually assaulting more than 100 mentally and physically disabled children and adults in care homes across Europe. The 54-year-old man, who has not been identified, committed the crimes in a 28-year span since 1982. And I would consider that the lack of oversight that happens in a lot of institutions would be very much responsible for allowing people like this to get away with abuse for significant periods of time.
Absolutely. You're absolutely correct. And the nature of psychiatry and how it is set up, and we have all the control with the doctor, with the psychiatrist, and very little with anyone else, it really attracts the sort of person that may be quite, the amount of power and imbalance there is incredible. And if you're into that, if you actually want to be abusive or control another individual, well, you pretty much have that whole area at your fingertips when you walk into the doors of psychiatry. I mean, as an individual, as a patient, if you happen to be in there, you pretty much lose all your rights as a citizen, and it's a pretty vulnerable place to be, and it should be actually a lot more restrictive on the workers in that sort of environment, but unfortunately it is not. So these things do happen. Quite a lot.
Well, it's a hard one because, you know, there are, like everything the establishment does that's generally wrong, like the way they police society, or there are kernels of truth to why it's practiced at the same time, because, like, there are genuinely crazy people getting around, you know. I had to go to the court yesterday, court in downtown Auckland here, and I beat the police after 3 hours, so that was a good day.
Okay.
Judge ruled in my favour, but I noticed there were some nutcases there.
Yeah,
you know, not just in the police prosecution side, but just generally in the audience, and that there's some genuine nutcases out in society. And perhaps they do need to be put in a certain place so that the rest of us can enjoy our freedoms, but I just find it, on the whole, I find psychiatry just totally ironic. These people who pretty much don't know anything about anything themselves are smart in a certain direction, then go out and want to judge people in the entire complexity of belief systems and approaches to life and perspectives on life. They want to go out and judge people according to their yardstick of normality, and it just comes across as really righteous, but righteous without them actually being in a position to be righteous. You know what I mean? I've met these psych students and psych graduates, and they're freaking idiots. And when it comes to knowing anything about history or tyranny or how populations are controlled, general mind control, I mean, they don't know basic Greek philosophy or anything. You know, they're just they're kind of mindless themselves, and I would probably throw them in a bin myself, you know.
Right.
But I just find it kind of ironic. Don't you see
you're absolutely correct. Yeah, and you know, it was always the a real battle for psychiatry to be a part of medicine. And, you know, this was something that is part of their history as well. And you know, it took them quite a bit of doing, and that they came out and tried to codify the, you know, various groups of people that they were so-called, you know, should be in control of and treating, in inverted commas, is treating, you know. And this is where the where we now have this Bible of theirs, this faith book called the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders. And, you know, it has everything in there that you could pretty much, you know, label a cat or a dog or anybody at all. You and I would probably have 50 or more of them in there ourselves. You know, there's no restrictions on who would be there, including themselves, of course. And this is the yardstick. It's they go and they would you know, diagnose someone as having some sort of mental disease. And this is what lands people into these hospitals. And sure, we're not saying that, hey, there's nothing wrong with certain people. And that's another story, because
it is another story.
And we might have to need to get onto that next time.
Indeed. Well, I'd love to have you back on again, Steve. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for listening to the first hour of the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It is a very, very fabulous, nice, hot, sunny day here in Auckland. And we'll be back next hour, continuing on the fastest 2 hours in talk radio, mixing with the conspiracy and comedy of the Vinnie Eastwood Show at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. We'll be back, folks.
In the belly of the vulture, watch your back. There's no civilians, women, children, front lines. Listen, consider this a distant early warning. The fire's imminent, pollution gathering dust particles funneling through smokestacks, airwaves, bandwidth, disinformation too fed. Check the labels, delete the virus, alert the masses.